Your station for the city.
We are Cambridge 105.
What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour with Matt Bentman.
And Ruth Reyes. Alan Alder will be back for our next episode, but he's left us some features to be going along with.
And today marks the second annual Eat Cambridge event. And what a perfect day it is too. Ruth and I attended the Eat Cambridge night market last Saturday, and we have plenty of clips from that evening to serve as an aperitif to the main event kicking off at the Corn Exchange today.
Also on today's programme, Alan catches up with Aoife Maxwell and Nazima Pathan for their Cocktail and Spice of the Month features respectively. I speak with Heidi White, one of the key organisers of Eat Cambridge, about Food Park, and we've news of the wonderful Siesta Fiesta that's happening on Sunday.
And Gigi Perry joins us again for some local food and drink and university food and drink news towards the end of the programme. So let's begin.
Last weekend's night market was a tremendous success. The number of visitors turned out to be far higher than anyone thought, and it became a wonderfully atmospheric night. Trying to decide where to begin, Matt spotted a familiar face and pounced, like a low-rent pretend journalist that he is.
Hello, Kerry Pavitt. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Things are really kicking off here. There's hundreds of people. It's very exciting. There's a huge amount of ambience. We've just crept into a quiet area where we can have a quick chat. Are you volunteering here today, Karen?
Yes, I've just been helping set up, so everything's underway now, and I've had my fill of steak and honour burgers and a cocktail from the Spirited Mare, the new trailer in a box cocktail bar, so it's been brilliant.
Are there lots of people here that you know?
Yeah, well, there's lots of the old favourites here. The Jack's Gelato, In This Kitchen, whose car park we're all set up in. Cafe Mobile, who you usually see on the Cambridge Market. Urban Street Kings, and some new ones that I haven't seen before. So the word is spreading. It's Cambridge and a few others who've managed to persuade their way in, so it's brilliant.
Because it's a slightly unusual location. We're around the back of Clifton Way, aren't we, in the industrial sector?
Light industry. And this is the home of Indus Kitchen, so they're right, sort of fairly central to Cambridge, but doing all their takeaway from here. Mm. It gives me that feel of the kind of the American street food scene, where they kind of have the massive parking lots, and they have the big vans, and that's when I thought about it. Where the location was made me think of that.
That
scene.
Is a good analogy, yeah.
Although we haven't got the massive trucks that they have in the States, we've got a lot of the Italian little cafe vans and the old French H50 Renault vans as well.
So what are you up to yourself, food-wise, Carrie?
Immersing myself completely in the Eat Cambridge scene this for the next month. I went to the launch last night at Fitzbillies with Steak and Honour and Jack's Gelato doing school dinners, which was awesome. And here, so yeah, I've got next month is planned, but starting to cook the occasional pie for friends and family and just enjoying it, really, and enjoying food again. It's brilliant. Good. When you make the same thing repeatedly, you kind of want to do something different, so it's nice to have that kind of variety. And to get to sample everybody else's wares, so it's been fantastic.
Okay then, Carrie, it's been great to catch up with you again.
Thank you, and enjoy the food tonight.
Certainly will, and we'll see you around.
Take care.
Thank you.
So we left a happy Carrie and we dove into the crowd, and it was a big crowd, even early on. I followed my nose to the waft of freshly baked pizza.
Okay, we're around the back of the Fired Up Pizza Company, and we're just going to have a quick chat with Mike Kalua, the manager. Hello, Mike. How's it going this evening?
Very well, yeah. It's pretty busy, actually, at the moment, which is good.
And how many pizzas have you churned out so far?
So far, I think we've probably done about maybe 120 or so, something like that.
120?
Yeah,
about.
Probably.
This place has only been running for an hour, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it might be a little bit less than that, but we cook about 100 an hour when we're at full flow.
Are you offering standard varieties of pizza, or are you taking custom orders?
Yeah, we're just basically, I mean, we're doing a slightly different menu, but we're doing pulled pork. That seems very popular at the moment with most people. Asparagus, because that's kind of in season. But, I mean, people can mix and match and do different sorts of things if they want, so.
And you have this lovely pizza oven over here, which has some gorgeous smells. Smells very authentic, very solid. Here comes a red hot pizza now, which you're about to slice up.
Is that caramelised onion on top?
It is caramelised onion, yeah. And barbecue sauce. For Louise. There we go. Thank you very much.
Now, you were up in Ely last week, is that correct?
Yes, yeah, we were at the Ely Eel Day, which is always good fun, and also Reach Fair, actually, which is a long-running fair.
Do you come to Cambridge very often?
We're based in Cottenham, actually, so just outside Cambridge, and we do events kind of all around sort of East Anglia.
How long have you guys been doing this?
We've been going for, this is our fifth year now, so So we started off pretty small. It's just kind of grown through since then. So we're doing sort of Mayballs and weddings and lots of different sorts of events now. So it's really sort of taking off, which is good.
And what got you going?
I was actually made redundant 2 weeks before my son was born, and I was just sitting in a garden panicking, wondering what I could do, and then I heard of this in Australia, actually. There was a company that do this, so obviously they can work all year round. And with a bit of redundancy money, I bought an oven, and the rest is history, basically.
And when you're pointing to this oven, this is a very specific oven, yeah?
It is, yeah. I mean, it's the chap that builds these ovens, builds them in restaurants, but he also, luckily, is able to build trailers as well. So we asked him, gave him the measurements and the dimensions and our requirements, and he came up with this. So we've got a couple of these ovens now, so we can do sort of obviously two different events at the same time. And yeah, he's a very skilled man, actually. He's very clever.
So two bespoke ovens, whole host of very efficient, very fast people.
Very efficient staff, couldn't do it without them, obviously.
So it looks like you're going to have a great evening.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good atmosphere here, and great idea that they're running this sort of thing. I think it's a good thing for Cambridge, basically. And people obviously like it, and you can see by the number of people here, so it's good.
Best of luck to you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to meet you. You are Mike Clue of Fired Up
Pizza. Okay. That's it.
Do you have a website that listeners can go to?
Yes, just Fired Up Pizza. And it's just one P in the middle, so FIREDUPIZZA.com.
Lovely. Thank you very much, Mike.
No problem. Thank you very much. Cheers.
There's a happy chap, and we'll be hearing from many different companies today. If any catch your ear, you'll be able to find links to them on our podcast page. So don't you worry, yeah? But hey, just as important was getting the opinions of the locals.
So let's talk with some of the visitors who are here today. I'm here with Joe and Mark. You have three pints between the two of you.
One's definitely an empty bottle.
It's a bit of a search for a bin at the minute.
And how are you finding it this evening, seeing as we're only barely an hour in?
We've only been here about 10 minutes, but it seems lovely.
We're waiting for our pizza.
Any particular flavour you ordered?
We've gone for one each, and we're going to go halves on it.
Pulled pork.
Pulled pork is very, very popular today. We're just chatting with the manager and he said that's the big one that's going
flying out. I think there's a couple of places doing pulled pork type things, so yeah, that's what sort of sent us over.
So how did you find out about this event?
Twitter, I think, yeah. Following a few people on Twitter. I work at a local youth hostel and we sort of follow eCambridge on there. Afternoon teas as well. Joe's very good at pushing things locally, so yeah, just thought we'd come down, check out what's happening.
And is there anything here in particular, apart from the pizza, that drew you here?
No particular stall, personally. It was more just, see what was happening. I knew the festival was on for a few weeks, but didn't know when I'd be able to get to an event. We're off to a gig later on, so we just thought we'd pop down beforehand.
Are you a bit of a food enthusiast yourself?
I am, yeah. My own cooking, not necessarily going out for meals. Budget doesn't always stretch to that. Yeah. That pizza looks good.
It does, doesn't it? Shame it doesn't translate on radio, really.
Plenty of pulled pork on that, though.
Yeah. Mm. Caramelised red onion.
Barbecue sauce as well, they said.
Yeah, barbecue sauce as well, certainly. Yeah. Well, it looks like a good night for you guys.
Yeah. Should be.
Just got to get up for work tomorrow morning. Yeah. I'll tell you that, mate.
No.
Yeah. No. 7:15 tomorrow, so.
Well, we'll catch you around, I'm sure.
All right.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Thank you very
take
much.
Care.
Cheers, guys.
We saw a gaggle of people walking around with cocktails, so we followed the trail back to the source. Or should I say, the horse box.
Hi there, my name is Vicky and I'm from the Spirited Mare, which is a bar in a box. That's a horse trailer which we've just converted into a bar, which will be travelling to food markets, weddings, events, festivals. We are at the Cambridge Eat Street Food Night Market and we have just stopped for our first breather. We've been very, very hectic serving cocktails to the people of Cambridge. Our most popular cocktails tonight have been the martini. It's been going down very well. And the raspberry mojito, I think. We've had a really good response. Everybody's loving the horse box. It's our first public outing, apart from a private event. So, yeah, really enjoying ourselves, loving it. And there's a great atmosphere here. Very, very busy. Really good night.
What's in the martini, then?
The martini is passion fruit, pulp and vodka, and it's topped up with Prosecco.
And when did you start this venture?
It's very new. We have been going for about 3 weeks. We've done a wedding so far, and this is our first public outing, as I said. So hopefully everyone will see us on the streets of Cambridge lots very soon. If you'd like to know more, you can follow us on Twitter at The Spirited Mare. And our website is just www.thespiritedmare.com.
Well, good luck for the rest of the evening.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, the two lads earlier mentioned that they found the night market via Twitter. It's interesting to find out how other people discovered it too.
Hello there. What brought you here tonight?
We found the advert in a Eat Cambridge book.
and we've never been to anything like this before, so we thought we'd give it a try.
Have any of the vendors here really attracted your attention?
We've had some nice food, like a pancake with chicken and tongue on it. It's really nice.
Chicken and tongue?
Yeah, they're separate. Really nice.
And you, sir, how are you finding it today?
Yeah, we're enjoying it very much. We come from Papworth Everard, and I thought, oh, well, fancy some of this, so we'll come to a few things. But
tonight's event goes on until 11 o'clock, I believe.
All right, yeah, well, we're going to a pub soon. Have a drink, see a band, but pity the weather isn't a little bit better, but it could be a lot worse, I suppose. Yeah.
Certainly could be a lot worse. And there's certainly been lots of nice things to try.
Yeah, lovely.
The people are really friendly, really nice.
Yeah, they certainly
are. Had a few chats with people, and yeah, they've obviously been before, and they know all about it, but we've never been, so it's great. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you very much.
Trish and Philip.
Nice to meet you, Trish and Philip.
Thank you.
I've never had a chicken pancake before, but let's take a short break from the night market for one moment, because we're going to go across to one of our regular features. Late last week, Alan went to find out about our spice of the month, cardamom, from Nazima Pathan and Pierre Korn at Franglais Kitchen.
Right, Nazima, the spice this month is cardamom.
Yep.
So tell us what you can do with cardamom.
There's two types, actually. People may not know so much. Most people will be familiar with the green cardamom.
Yeah, I've seen plenty of that.
Largely derived from India and South Asia. There's also a sort of larger variety called black cardamom, which is similar scents, and they're both part of the ginger family, but they has a slightly more smoky aroma. So it's interesting, more used in the Far East Asian cuisines. Mm-hmm. So another interesting thing about black cardamom is that in the Flavour Thesaurus, which is a book that we use a lot, the lady who's written that, Neki Senyet, says that black cardamom, because of its smoky flavour, actually is a great, what she suggests is a use of sort of tones of bacon. So, you know, you could put that in stews and it has a similar kind of flavour that it will impart to the stew. Mm. So if you're vegetarian, that might be something to consider.
Yes.
So there's two types. And really an important part, obviously, of Indian cuisine, savoury and sweet dishes, from biryani and cooking with meats, particularly with lamb, great combination, in curries, but also in sweet dishes, obviously with plenty of fruit, such as mangoes and in lassis and the cold yogurty drinks that you can make. The other countries that use it a lot are the Scandinavian countries. They use cardamom in baking with sweet breads. The Finnish baking has a bread that's a Finnish plaited loaf with cardamom, and in Sweden they have cardamom buns as well. So it's a big importer of cardamom after Asia. So it's interesting because it's so far away.
I'm just drinking some chai, and this has cardamom in
it.
Very
is.
Nice it is too. And I've had cardamom with coffee before.
That's right. So it's very popular in Middle Eastern cuisine, and as you say, Pierre, it's part of the Ras El Hanout. So it's quite
that's
a lot of.
Yeah. Ras El Hanout, which is a spice mix from North Africa. There's many different type of Ras El Hanout that you can find, but it's the equivalent of garam masala in India.
Mm.
It's the equivalent, but for North Africa, and obviously cardamom is included in that mix.
And what are these two dishes here?
So what we've done today, one of them, well, they're both going to be flavours that we've got in our supper club next month, at the end of May, in part of Eat Cambridge, and so we've got a panna cotta. And it's made with the milk from jasmine rice that's been cooked in it, and we've added a bit of cardamom to that. So it has it's a very subtle
So
flavor.
You've cooked jasmine rice?
With in milk at a very low temperature, and if you have a sous vide, then you can do it with that, and it concentrates the flavour very well, but otherwise you can do it on the stove. And in fact, we did it on the stove as well for today. And then you need to add a little bit of gelatin just to set it, or you can add more cream, and that helps it to set thicker as well. So it's a panna cotta, and you can use cardamom in the same way as vanilla. So in creme brulees and custards and creme pâtissière.
I need to try a bit.
Yes, do try some. It'll be nice with this rhubarb compote. So that's the other thing that we've done. It's very subtle, because cardamom's quite overpowering otherwise. So you don't want it to be too strong.
Yeah. So what's this one? This is rhubarb compote.
Yep. So rhubarb, you prepared that, cooked it initially, didn't you?
Yeah, well, sous vide, cinnamon, sugar, and cooked sous vide.
And then I sort of added some orange juice, poached it with a bit of cardamom again. And then once it had become a bit thicker, we blended it down into a nice smooth compound with the seed as well, the cover.
Well, I saw one or two of the seeds inside. There is a bit of the texture of them, which I think is really attractive. Mm. It's absolutely delicious.
It's a nice combination. Mm. Try the two together because they really...
That is tremendous.
And lots of sugar. You know, essentially, you could just do it at home poaching, you know, some rhubarb. This is two stalks of rhubarb poached with some orange juice, cinnamon, cardamom.
Will you be posting a recipe?
I'll post both these. I've taken a picture, so that'll be on the website as well. So I'll put it on for coming up on the Saturday that your show broadcasts.
Well, that's tremendous. I always have rhubarb with ginger and orange, and I really enjoy
it's a great
it. But this is a fantastic combination.
Yeah.
This is a real find. Thank you.
Our thanks to Nazima and Pierre. How come Alan gets all the good jobs?
Mm-hmm. Well, meanwhile, back at the night market, I caught up with a guy brandishing a very fancy-looking dairy-based beverage governor.
Hi, my name's Tom. I'm just grabbing a milkshake. I'm opting for many good flavours, but I'm just going for the chocolate cheesecake. And I'm here because it's a cool Cambridge vibe, that's exactly what Cambridge needs. And, yeah, it's just great to see everyone out on a nice day. Perfect.
Luckily for my pathetic detective skills, the source of Tom's chocolate cheesecake milkshake was standing right behind him, cunningly disguised as a magnificent milkshake fan? No, THE magnificent milkshake fan.
Hello, my name's Chris and this is Holly. We're from the Magnificent Milkshake Company. We make ice cream milkshakes all based on real desserts. We're at Eat Cambridge tonight and it's been really, really good. Everybody's here enjoying all the different food.
It's the second year we've done it. It's bigger and better this year, isn't it? It's been so busy. Everyone's been so optimistic and willing to try all the flavours and really positive, and it's just been really enjoyable serving people as well. Mm. So we've had a lot of fun so far.
Yeah, it's all about having fun really, you know. It's good when it's really busy. You're really going for it, putting lots of orders out, and just enjoying seeing the queue. And
that's the part we enjoy, isn't it? The busier we are, the more fun we kind of have, because you really kind of get into what you're doing. And this is only our part-time job. We've both got full-time jobs as well. Wow. So this is a complete break from what we do normally.
Because I would imagine that something like this, which I guess you're quite passionate about, does it not start consuming more and more of your time?
Yes, it does. You just have to try and find a balance, really, and you find any time you have off. You're not doing your day job, you're doing your evening job, or you know,
things, because we enjoy food in general. We don't work with food normally. It's not so much as a job as just a real kind of a hobby that we've built up, and the fact that we've built it up from scratch kind of makes it even more special and even more important to us as well.
So what made you choose milkshakes?
Oh gosh, I'm trying to find a gap in the market, having gone to festivals ourselves and thinking what would we want, and knowing, well, Chris was brought up on a dairy farm,
so I know milk.
But neither of us actually enjoy drinking milk on its own. And we've always said as well, milkshakes, sometimes they can be quite thin and runny, and we've hated that. And we thought, wouldn't it be nice to do something really thick with ice cream as well, not just with milk?
Well, we like the idea of putting the milkshakes together with the different puddings, and we had a really nice theme going through. It all sort of came together, so we could do different pudding flavours and try and do something different with the theme of it. There's a lot of people doing whizzed up chocolate bars and things like that, and we wanted to steer away from that and still hand blend them and put the ingredients together on the spot to a recipe.
So these are all your own recipes?
Yes. Yeah, we spent many hours devising recipes in the kitchen, and we'd literally have a sip and then try it again, and we'd put the empty ones on the floor, and we've got a small dog and he had an absolute field day. We turned around once and he was just helping himself to all the leftover milkshakes. It was terrible. So we had fun actually devising the recipes ourselves.
That was every weekend. We just had to stay in and try and come up with a recipe, come up with an idea, you know, a banoffee pie or something like that, and then actually try and get the ingredients together to actually make it taste like a banoffee pie or an Eton mess or whatever. So it was just lots of trial and error, lots of blending and lots of ingredients and lots of keeping the dog off the milkshakes.
And is your job related in any way to this?
No, I'm a carpenter. But it was handy when we had to build the trailer.
Chris completely renovated this trailer, put all the shelves in, put all the storage in. It was just a shell,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
We found an old wreck in a field somewhere. And over the first sort of winter we put the trailer together, and then we did the recipes at the same time, and then just started doing little events everywhere and just built it up like that, really. So we put everything together and we just opened up, and if nobody came to buy anything, you know, that was
it.
But yeah, at least we tried it, but people did, didn't they? It soon took off, so that was really good, really, really encouraging.
And some of the flavours that you've concocted, could you describe just a couple of them?
Yeah, they're kind of classics. Well, what we'd consider to be a British classic, or not necessarily British in origin. Well, we've got the vanilla creme brulee, so we actually blend a bit of custard and real vanilla extract through it as well to make it really creamy, with caramelised sugar on top. Banoffee pie, everybody loves the banoffee pie, the toffee sauce, chocolate, biscuits. We do a mocha one as well. We do eat a mess, that's strawberries and meringue. We do a rhubarb and custard, which has proven very popular this evening. We've sold out of lemon meringue this evening.
So hopefully there's a little bit for everybody. You know, there's for the chocolate lovers, there's the chocolate cheesecake, there's the eat and mess, the creme brulee a little bit lighter, rhubarb and custard's nice sort of tang to it, you know. So yeah, hopefully there's a flavour for everybody.
Well, very nice to chat to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hope the rest of your evening goes fantastically.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And then, who do I run into immediately afterward? But...
No. Hello, Charles, of the Gogmagog Hills Farm Shop. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic, thank you. Yeah, what a pleasant surprise to see you here.
I think it was about February 2012 the last time I saw you.
No way, really?
You still got the turkeys?
Still got the turkeys, but much, much has changed. Yeah, you must come and see us.
It would be nice to, yes.
Yeah.
So how are you finding this evening?
Oh, it's excellent. I know it's really, really busy. There's so many people around. It's kind of ridiculous, but... Isn't it fantastic to see it's so well subscribed and so many people are actually into something like this?
Yeah.
You know, there's a real appetite for it. So, yeah, really, really encouraging. Mm. In fact, I'm looking around for a few ideas myself.
Do you hear that voice in the background? We love you, Charlie! Brought his own fan club with him. I'll be catching up with the Gogmagog Farm Shop in the next episode.
Made in the city. For the city.
We are Cambridge 105.
Eat Cambridge has a string of fringe events around the city. On Thursday, Matt went along to Hot Numbers on Guider Street for one such event, a coffee specialty evening. Here are some comments from people who attended.
This is called a coffee flavour wheel.
I get quite a floral thing, slightly herby.
There are some green notes, aren't there?
A lot of the time, herby, that's maybe. The chaff on the bean as well. Really, yeah. Gives us
I think it's
notes.
Really nutty. But it tastes like almost like praline nuts. Well, not taste, smells like praline nuts.
Jenny tricked me into drinking coffee from the high street and then progressed through to like mocha, then to Americanos, cappuccinos, things like that, and then just down to double espressos. And that's like a morning ritual. All the guys that I work with, we go to our work canteen and we have a double espresso, and that starts the day. I don't know, I think as soon as I got hold of an AeroPress, that kind of became my fascination, I think. It's nice because Hot Numbers is one of the only places that I come and have a double espresso that actually kind of tastes how a coffee should. It's so nice to come to something like this and just kind of almost compare notes to kind of see how the masters do it.
And how have you found it so far with some of the tastes and the different coffee making techniques?
Fantastic, actually. It's interesting seeing the siphon, because Hot Numbers first opened, we came in and this was kind of new equipment at the time, and we were kind of bowled over by it, and it's nice to see.
The siphon is the eye-catching equipment that everybody gets.
Yeah, it's almost like the lab equipment.
With the red-hot glow underneath and the bubbling through. It's very entertaining. It's almost like a lava lamp.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know, it's lovely to see people kind of come together and then just kind of chat over the table about their different interests and the ways that they got into coffee, and kind of funny knowing that you're not alone in this.
Do you consider it a hobby now? Would you call it a hobby?
Yeah, definitely. I kind of list it amongst my favourite things, like... aside from pizza, coffee is probably a close second.
And all from something you just almost fell into.
Yeah,
you introduced.
Happened upon. Yeah, and actually, this place couldn't have opened at a better time, because I was really starting to feel like Cambridge was sorely lacking a decent coffee shop, just as I was kind of getting into coffee. So maybe either this kind of spurred that on, or it was just a happy coincidence. But yeah.
It's a rather glib question, but you drink coffee because you enjoy it. You're not drinking it because you need the caffeine hit to get through the day or to get through the morning, necessarily.
Yeah. No, I definitely drink it because I prefer the taste. I wouldn't say I drink it because I need the caffeine but don't like the taste. I don't think that's, you know, that's very good for anyone.
But people do that.
I mean, I know there's girls at my office who kind of can't get through the morning without about 3 cups of coffee, and I kind of say, but you enjoy it, right? And they're like, yeah, it tastes fine. But they're not savouring it in the same way that you would if you came somewhere like here. Or drinking it in this way, where it's kind of so mild and
and kind of not watered down, but it's in its kind of purest form.
I guess I'm just trying to extricate an ideal, like why a guitarist plays a guitar, why a pianist, why someone takes on the hobby that they do. Something that really underscores the passion of following something like coffee. You know, when Sean was going on about the ritual being an important thing.
I think it's so infused in our culture now. Like, people just spend their lives kind of going and socialising at coffee places. That's what, you know, what you do. Like, oh, where should we meet? Rather than going to the pub now, people are, oh, I'll go to the cafe and have a coffee with you. Let's go, like, socialise there. And then that kind of being the ritual of meeting each other, but also doing it over something like this is really nice, because it's something you can all talk about, it's something you can react to. And
I think one of the things that interests me is you can guarantee that almost everyone here comes from a slightly different background. Okay, we're all in Cambridge and we all gather around the local coffee shop, but people with different occupations, different people come around to have a coffee and have a chat, and it's just another thing that brings people together, which is a really wonderful thing.
Yeah. To me it feels like a similar culture to, I've been to a couple of wine evenings where I've had to report on, you know, and people give much the similar stories that you do, but they like to follow the history of the grape, you know, the region has grown in over so many years, because you can detect the differences in the years, in the summers, the wet summers, the dry summers, the concentrations of the soil and so on and so on. We don't go into that so much with coffee, but...
No, I think you could though, definitely, if you were that interested, you could really geek out on stuff like that and just go all the way into finding everything about where the beans come from, how it's been processed, who's handled it. I mean, Simon's always saying how he's the coffee that he makes here has passed through as few hands as possible in order to get here, so that, you know, all the beans are being directly sold to the customer who's then drinking it, but also so that there's fair prices for the people who are growing it, and it's all just really direct. And that's really nice to kind of know that that's happening, and that you're getting it in its kind of best and purest form, rather than it kind of going through so many hands and time being taken away from it. It's just coming direct.
Is it nice to have that link in Cambridge where you reference Simon by his name? You know the guy who runs this place and you know his enthusiasm for coffee. It feels kind of heartwarming to have that link, have that synchronicity with the guy.
Well, I think that's been such a huge thing about Hot Numbers, is that it's been so personal to kind of see how it's grown over the last few years. I mean, I can't even remember when it opened, like what?
February 2011.
Well then... Since then, we've come here so often that you kind of, you get to know all the regulars and you see all the people who work here, and you kind of get to know either by overhearing or chatting to them what their name is, whereas you just wouldn't get that in other places, because you get so many different people working there all the time and the changeover is so frequent that now, and especially because Simon, I mean, it's his baby, so it's kind of, he wants everyone who comes here to be having the best time and enjoying the best coffee that he can kind of provide. And it's really prevalent in his kind of passion for it, and that's what's great about it.
And have you found this evening very inspirational, very educational?
Yeah, sure. It has been a bit like a science lesson in here with the siphon coffee going on and everything bubbling away and talking about Bunsen burners. But yeah, it's all these methods that I kind of knew about but never knew the details. So that's been really fascinating, actually, to learn all about that.
To be honest, I'm more of a sort of casual coffee drinker. This is a new thing for me. My girlfriend suggested it, and yeah, I hadn't realised quite what a subculture it is, quite how many different methods there are of brewing, etc.
Ah, so you're here doing the dutiful thing, yeah?
Well, I'm sort of, yeah, I'm being weaned onto it, maybe. Morning coffee at work with a cafetiere is about as far as it goes. But yeah, it's been really interesting to learn about the different ways of making it and tasting the difference of the same coffee beans brewed in different ways. It's been really interesting as well.
Yeah, speaking of the taste, how have you found the consistency, the feel of the coffee tonight?
I think that's varied a lot between the different methods. Like the siphon brew was almost like tea, really sort of gentle tasting, whereas the espresso just now was sort of enough to knock you backwards, really biting coffee.
Yeah, we just tried one just now. We should point out again, this is all the same bean, just processed in different ways.
Yeah.
And it came out, someone here described it as almost like a really bitter lemon flavour.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to try this one as well.
We're really getting to extremes.
That tastes miles and miles different from the French press at the office, definitely.
It's amazing the range you can get just from the different processes.
Absolutely.
I'm going to try some of this, which made your face turn.
It's powerful. It's powerful.
I've definitely expanded my horizons tonight.
Mm.
I've had them expanded.
You'll be awake till tomorrow. Just for that.
Reminds me of medicine. Medicine as a kid, really. But are you starting to see some of the reasons why your girlfriend is so interested in this?
Definitely. I actually think there'll be, I'll maybe pay a little more attention tomorrow when I make coffee at work, how much I'm actually putting in and how long I wait. Usually it's a bit of a bit of a guess. Yeah, I half expect her to buy a £200 siphon kit. We'll see.
It was nice to hear people talking about the coffee house culture equal to their love of coffee. It was an aficionado's evening, but not in a way that felt intimidating, I don't think. In actual fact, it was enlightening, and that's what Eat Cambridge feels like to me. This isn't a get-together of pompous foodie enthusiasts. It's about fun, entertainment, sights, smells, and flavour. We're flavour.
We are flavour. Back to the night market now with someone who has all the banter.
Roll up, yeah? Come and have a feel your mother didn't like. We're professional bun handlers and all that, yeah? Do you want a hot dog?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, eat a hot dog. What's the radio station?
We're Cambridge 105.
Cambridge 105, I never turn off. There you go, have a half chopped in half. Do you want mustard?
No. Please.
And then ketchup?
No, thank you.
Good.
You've got the chipotle ketchup as well.
Chipotle ketchup.
Bring on the hot dogs.
So I'm speaking with James Tabor of the Dogtown Hot Dog Company. Now, this is your first time here, I understand. I was just talking with Heidi Sladen.
Yeah, correct, it is. First time we've been out. We're actually not far from here, so it's quite nice to do something local.
You're Essex-based, is that right?
I am, North Essex, near Stansted Airport, just under the flight path.
And how's it been going this evening?
Rammed. Amazing, yeah, brilliant, brilliant. We've had a queue constantly, pretty much since we got here, so it's been unbelievable, yeah.
Great. And the type of hot dogs you've been serving today are?
We do a few different ones. We do a pork frank, which is kind of, we call it the torta frank, which is based on a regulation frankfurter, but we make it ourselves in there. From Suffolk and Essex Farms, pork, all free-range pork, and they're smoked and made in London. And then we also do a beef one, which is a halal job, but they're really, really good. They're also free-range and rare breeds. The meat comes from a company called the Rare Breed Meat Company, who are in East Anglia. They're based in Earl's Cone in Essex. And then we also do a smoked tofu, which we call the smoked vegan. And we do fried onions fried in vegetable oil for the vegans. And it's fully approved by the vegetarian police.
It's quite unusual to have a vegan selection at a hot dog company,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, well, for us, you know, I mean, there's always a percentage, and, you know, we don't just do street food markets, you know, we do private events, we do all sorts of stuff, so depending on your demographic, you get different types of people who want different types of things, so sometimes you sell about 10% vegan, sometimes it's 40%, you know, yeah, depending on where you are.
And can we expect to see you a little bit more often in Cambridge?
We hope so, yeah. I mean, I want to establish a presence here, really. We're trying to build the brand, you know, as much as we can. And the idea is, you never know, one day we might take a lease and get bricks and mortar. So we operate out of two places. Well, I run the kitchens of two places in London at the moment. But we're thinking about getting somewhere proper. So if Cambridge takes off and they learn to love us as much as London loves us, then maybe we might open a place as well.
Oh, good luck to you, sir.
Thanks very much indeed. Appreciate it. Now have a hot dog.
Oh, will do. I'd love one.
Cheers, man.
Cheers.
Now, if you haven't noticed, I'm ever so slightly American, and those were very authentic hot dogs. You can expect to see more from Dogtown Hot Dogs in the near future.
We then headed to the beer section, which was also serving wine and some of the nicest sherry this side of Abigail's party.
Yeah, you have some of this. It's the fifth release, Tio Pepe on Rama. It's been in the UK for about 3 weeks. It was taken from the barrel, bottled and shipped to the UK within 3 days. So this is the freshest Vino Sherry that you can get. If it was any fresher, you would have to spank it. This is like the official line.
It's beautiful.
But wonderfully fresh, crisp apples.
I can smell it from here.
Really, extremely can. Aromatic. And you can, I know it's dark in here, but you can tell from the colour.
Yeah.
It's not being fined or filtered. And it's got that lovely...
It's like fumes.
Golden yellow. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Sherry
I've not
tan.
Tasted any sherry like that before.
You've never tasted on Rama. Well, welcome to the beginning of the rest of your life.
It's like apples and then raisins.
Quite salty. It's got that nutty, almondy... I mean, all we need, obviously, is some classic tapas. I mean, I wouldn't say no to a burger, but being as we're on the subject of sherry, then I think a really, really classic... ham on some manchego. It really, it's such a brilliant aperitif. It really brings the palate to life, really excites the taste buds. So one's never enough.
I've never tasted the saltiness in a sherry before.
Never?
No, I don't think so.
Goodness me. Mm. It's very, very classic of the Manzanilla or the Fino style. You won't find it so much in Oloroso, but it's definitely a keynote. No idea where it comes from, because they're actually If you do chemical analysis on it, there is no sodium in this product at all, and only 56 calories. It won't do anything to your blood pressure, so it's completely sodium free, but it does have quite a salty tang. That's the magic of wine.
So you've been having to do a few beer runs tonight.
We have had to do a few beer runs. Although the idea was to have a wine bar, we decided because of the style of food that we would just throw a few beers into. So we started off with 400 bottles of beer, which sold out in the first 2 hours. We then got another 200, which sold out in the next hour. So it's very, very difficult because you've got no idea how many people are going to come to an event like this. And also, as you can see, we're surrounded by empty bottles. You know, there's a storage issue. These events are really fantastic. But when you're a bar, where are you going to store not just the stuff? You've got to make it cold, and then it takes up as much space when it's empty as it does when it's full. You know, it's not like with food. You bring some food and people eat it and then it disappears, whereas they bring all this stuff back.
The bottles are everywhere.
It takes up the same amount of space full as it does empty.
This is like your lounge room.
Yes, yeah. Yes, it is. No, God, no.
Really?
No, I live with my mother. She'd never let that happen. Maybe once when I was living in London after a Saturday night.
So it's been terrific that so many people have been to the event this evening. It's been a huge success. So many happy, smiley faces, a really, really great vibe, a lovely environment, so much fun. But it's so upsetting when you run out of something that you know people want. It's not even dark yet and we've got no beers. But Super Richard is on his way to get us some more beer right now. So come on, Richard, we're rooting for you. I don't know how he's going to do it, but, you know.
Lindsay was a fiend for sherry. She lives it, breathes it and writes it.
So the Cambridge edition very kindly accepted two articles I've written about sherry, both of which have the catchphrase "begin immediately." don't wait around for sherry. So the first one is an introduction. It explains the different styles of sherry and how you can have a complete, like a capsule wardrobe of sherry in three very easy steps, which covers all possibilities. And then the second article goes on to explain how to accessorize that wardrobe so that if it's a standard Monday afternoon sherry or if it's a Friday night sherry, you know, if you want to jazz it up a little bit, you know, we can do that. And so hopefully it will persuade more people to drink sherry and show them that it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to be an excellent chef. Frazzles, cheesy footballs, onion rings, all of these things are fine. You don't need to be able to make very complicated dishes. It's all very easy. Just get yourself a bottle and open it and drink it and enjoy it. Love it for what it is.
How liberating.
Absolutely, liberate yourself.
So that's your two sherry articles. You are Lindsay...
Lindsay Spellman from Cambridge Wine Merchants.
Thank you very much, Lindsay.
Thank you very much. It's been a riot. Now there's a queue. So
hey.
I'm going to finish my sherry and get back to it.
Okay, have fun.
Thank you very much. Enjoy. Thank you.
And you can find Lindsay Spellman's sherry articles online. We shall provide direct links from our podcast page because we're nice like that. And while you're at it, why not follow Flavour on Twitter too? We are at Flavour105 and we retweet interesting food and drink news, including the next Cambridge pop-ups and supper clubs.
We love being local because we live here too.
Cambridge 105, community radio in your city.
You may have noticed that the elderflower is back in bloom.
Hey, Ruth, isn't the elderflower back in bloom?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah. Eva Maxwell noticed too.
I've just started to see a little bit of elderflower coming out in the hedgerow, and it inspired me, especially with the sunny weather that we had last weekend, to try and think of some drinks. One that would incorporate that, kind of a classic English ingredient. Mm. And also think about drinks that are good for sitting outside in the sun. Maybe you don't want something particularly alcoholic, something that you could drink a lot of, or, you know, it's just a nice kind of cooling drink, but with a little bit of a kick in it. And so I was thinking a lot about elderflower, and I think I started to think about some other classic English ingredients, and a little tot of sherry kind of popped into my mind. One, because I really love sherry, and two, it seems like, although I mean it's a Spanish drink, it always is wrapped up in my mind with quintessential Englishness.
Yes.
So I wondered about trying to put them together in, you know, some kind of punch or drink in some way.
So you've been experimenting?
I have been experimenting, and actually I've been doing a little bit of research as well, and I discovered that there's a Spanish drink, which I won't be able to pronounce properly, but I'll give it a go, Rebujito, I think, which uses normally a fino sherry and maybe some sparkling water or some, you know, lemonade, Sprite-type drink combined together. And that's quite a popular drink in Spain, apparently, and I'd never really heard of it before. And I thought, oh, sherry, I like the sound of that. And then reading back, you know, more historical cocktails, there's actually quite a few sherry cobblers and sherry punches that people used to make, you know, different sherries and different liqueurs and spirits. So kind of building on all that and putting my own take on it was really what I was trying to do. What I came up with was a drink which I made for the first time last weekend and loved it, so I thought I would share it with you. And it's a very easy one to make, and unlike some of my other recipes where I have quite a strict ratio, I think this is a good one where put the ingredients together and taste it, because it's, again, a combination of sherry, something sweet, the elderflower cordial, bringing that elderflower in, and some lemon juice. But we really want to make sure we balance the flavours, and the lemons might be quite different. So we'll start to build it up and see how we go.
Yeah, taste it as you go.
Yeah, and the other good thing about this drink, I think you could really make a jug of it and have it. You could make a jug of all the ingredients and then put a bottle of sparkling water out to top it up, or you could put the sparkling water in the jug as well and make an enormous jug. But I'm just going to make a glass today because it's just the two of us, and I think a jug might be slightly overkill.
it is quite early in the day still.
So I've got a very large...
It's more like a vase, really.
Yeah, it is actually. And I've got a rather nice bottle of Fino Sherry. Now, I mean, when I say rather nice, just because I love sherry, but it's really nothing special. It's Tio Pepe. It's a very good brand, but, you know, I haven't gone out and spent a fortune on sherry here.
Yeah.
And I know Tom Lewis has spoken quite a bit about sherry on the programme before, which was some great programmes. I'm fully on board with anything sherry related. So a Fino sherry, you know, it's quite mild, it's quite dry, it's crisp, it's good cold. So I'm taking 100 millilitres of sherry and I'm putting it directly into the glass that we're going to drink the cocktail out of.
Right.
So I'm measuring, as in my usual little tiny measuring cylinder, 100 mils of Fino sherry. And then I've just... You can make your own elderflower cordial, and that's something I'd recommend. If you see some elderflowers popping out in the hedgerows, you know, make your own. But there isn't enough out yet for me to have made my own.
So I'm just
using...
Early.
Yeah, they're just starting to come out.
Yeah.
So I'm using a commercial brand, which I like very much. And I'm just using... I'm going to start with 25-30 mils of elderflower cordial directly in there as well.
Right.
And we'll see how we go. If we want it a bit sweeter, we'll see. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take... This is a reasonably small lemon. I want to use all the lemon, so I'm going to use the juice as well. And I'm just going to juice that directly into the glass.
Right.
Through a strainer, just so I catch any pips. So this is quite a small lemon, so I'm going to use a whole lemon.
Okay.
But if it was a large one for this glass, I might start with half and see how I go, but I think I'm going to need at least one small lemon. And I'm going to add one last ingredient that isn't essential, but I like to do it because I have them. So I have some bitters here, and I have this lovely hopped grapefruit bitters, which adds another lovely citrus note, and also some additional aromaticity to go with our elderflower. So I'm just going to add a couple of drops, but, you know, this really isn't essential if you don't have it. So at this stage, before I do anything with ice or sparkling water or anything else, I'm going to give it a stir and taste it and see how I feel about the balance of flavours. I think that might do with a bit more lemon, actually, but and lemons are one of those interesting ingredients. You know, they're natural. The acidity varies by the lemon. These are quite small lemons. So
it's interesting to taste the combination of lemon and sherry, because that's not a combination I've ever tasted before.
It's quite nice, actually,
it
isn't
is,
it? Yeah.
It is.
Before I started playing around with this, I wouldn't have thought that sherry in a long drink like this would work. But actually, I really like it. And I don't think it... At first, I was like, why would you ruin a good glass of sherry by putting other things in? But actually, I think it really works. I like the way the flavours come through. Okay. Let me just... I'll just use a straw. I think that extra lemon's really worked a treat there, actually. Okay. And it's all about getting that balance right. You know, it isn't difficult. Sometimes people get put off when you say taste it and see what you think and adjust the ingredients, but it really comes down to your taste as well. Some people may prefer it sweeter too. I personally like a little bit tartar, so I might put more lemon in. So we're nearly there then, really. What I've got to add in is I've got these lovely ice cubes that I've made. I have some circular molds and I've frozen some lemon peel in them just to add an extra bit of summer kind of jazziness.
That's good.
So I'll pop one of those in along with just regular ice cubes, and I'm really going to almost fill the glass, you know, so it's three quarters full now with ice and drink. And I'll probably add a slice or two of lemon. Because it's always nice on a summer's day to have a drink that looks pretty as well as tastes good. So put some lemon slices in. Oops.
And this quite big glass. There's not a great deal of sherry in this, is it? So, I mean, it is a long drink. You could actually reasonably drink all of that and remain upright.
There's a lot of ice in there. You know, we're putting a lot of other ingredients in there.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So the other last thing I'm going to add in is some lemon balm leaves, which just give another nice and a fragrant aspect to the drink.
Yeah.
I have a crush there, if you like. I like lemon balm a lot, and it grows in profusion on my allotment, so I tend to try and use it up by putting it in drinks or making tea out of it. And it looks nice in the drink as well, and, you know, gives a nice summer.
I can imagine this would go really well with the sherry, actually. It's got something similar about it.
Yeah, and put that in. So the green against the very pale yellow of the drink, and the slices of lemon starting to look really nice in there along with the ice cubes. And then all I'm going to do is take a fresh bottle of sparkling water, open it up so it's nice and fresh and bubbly, and top up the drink there. I've got about slightly less than a quarter of the glass to fill up. But if you didn't want to make it so alcoholic, you could put maybe less ice in, or use a bigger glass, or less of the other ingredients, and do it that way. So have a taste see what you think.
Yeah, it's good. It's nice and refreshing, isn't it?
It's really refreshing.
Yeah.
But I think that the sherry, it still gives it that kind of complex grown-up aspect to it. You know, you can taste the sherry. It's not just lemon juice and some kind of sugary syrup. But there's something, you can really taste there's something interesting going on in there. What I really like about this is when I have people over for cocktails, you know, sometimes people expect me to be there, you know, making cocktails in the corner, shaking drinks, but I really want to just go and chat to people and have a good time. So I prefer to make things up in advance, and I think it's a really, you know, good thing to do. So
and just add the sparkling water at the end.
So you just get a jug, combine your sherry, your lemon, your elderflower cordial. It's all there for people. Some bottles of sparkling water. I mean, you can do the last bit and pour it out for people, or you can get it to do it themselves. So they still get a tasty drink, but you don't have to, you know, tie yourself to the kitchen.
And it is cocktails. A tasty drink. The sherry, you're right, it just adds an interest almost, doesn't it, really?
Exactly.
Yeah, good. That's excellent. Thank you very much, Aoife.
Yes, many thanks to Aoife Maxwell. Aoife is talking about cocktails and giving some samples, we believe, at the Eat Cambridge main event this afternoon. That's at the Corn Exchange, and she will be on from 2:50 to 3:10. There's no booking necessary, just turn up.
After all the excitement of the Eat Cambridge Night Market, we have even more street food fun to look forward to in the form of Food Park Cambridge, headed our way and into my tummy on the 6th of June. I spoke with Heidi White, who spearheads the project. Okay, so Food Park Cambridge is probably one of the most exciting things that I'm looking forward to.
Oh,
tell us a bit more about
you.
It.
So it is a collective of local street food traders who basically have been bringing their really good quality street food to the streets of Cambridge for quite a while, but they've never been given the opportunity to trade regularly all together in one place. Inspired by the likes of Curb and the Street Feast in London and lots of other cities where this is happening, I decided that Cambridge needed something similar and established Food Park as a market and a collective to trade lunchtimes in the city for whoever wants to come along to come and get street food on a regular basis.
I'm so excited. Who's going to be involved?
It's really taken off, and we've got about 12 traders confirmed and more traders from the local area getting on board and looking at buying vehicles and looking at setting up kind of offshoots of their existing food businesses. We've got the regular street food heroes, as I like to call them, Steak and Honour and Jack's Gelato. Inda's Kitchen have purchased a vehicle just last week, and they're going to be out on the streets doing Carti rolls, which are basically these Calcuttan wraps. So really authentic street food that they can cook right there in front of you and you can take away for lunch. There's also people like Dogtown, who are from near Stansted, and they haven't really traded in Cambridge before, so they want to get involved. They do big hot dogs. And then Buffalo Joe's, the chicken wing traders, who were a massive hit last weekend at the Cambridge Street Food Market. They're desperate to get into Cambridge. They're from near Saffron Walden, so they'll be parking up in their Citroen H van and giving something different.
So is it just going to be lunchtimes?
Lunchtimes to start with.
Okay.
Every Friday, we've secured a pitch near the station, starting Friday the 6th of June, for breakfast trade and lunch trade every Friday in a small market for about 6 traders called Street Food Fridays. At breakfast time we'll have coffee, and that's from Warming Your Cockles, the new little Piaggio 8 van. She does, Emily there does craft coffee. A very special breakfast treat from Steak and Honour, which I think I'm allowed to announce. And it's basically a sausage muffin, and I've been told that running through the sausage patty there's some black pudding. and then it will be served in an English muffin with egg and cheese, and that will be available from 8 a.m. So on that day, people could find they're having a steak and honour for breakfast, followed by a steak and honour burger for lunch.
That's the ideal day.
Yeah, yeah. And a Friday is good because people often fancy some kind of treat for Friday lunch. And especially around the station, there aren't really that many lunch options yet. Yeah, you can get a sandwich at the station, but, you know, there's not much choice. So hopefully this will provide those people with something to look forward to every Friday. You know, people will have a changing menu of street food on offer, basically.
Ideas. How long has this been going on?
I've been into street food for a couple of years. Steak and Honour kind of got me interested in the beginning, and I tracked them down basically every week as many times as I could for ages. And then I've visited really awesome street food markets in London and places like that. And there's even a street food scene going on in Norwich, just nearby. And I thought, you know, Cambridge really needs something like that. So I started looking around at potential sites where, you know, a landlord might be open to having us park up. There's massive issues with just parking up in the city centre because you can't just trade, you know, without permits and the necessary permissions.
Heidi mentioned a little about the traders and what's happening, but I wanted to know a little bit more about others getting involved.
From Friday the 6th of June, we'll have Steak and Honour in the morning with the new craft coffee trader warming your cockles from 8 a.m. And then at lunchtime, Inda's Kitchen will join with their new vehicle, their new van, Jack's Gelato, and Two Little Cats Bakery, who have just launched a new range of cupcakes, featuring things like maple and bacon and cocktail flavours, which personally I'm really, really excited about, and I don't even really like sweet things, so it must be something special. And they've also got a nice, pretty new van that they're going to bring along. There's a huge list of traders that will be rotating into the lineup as we go forward, including Urban Street Kings with their steamed buns. There's a new trader trading Icelandic hot dogs called Scandi Dogs. A lady called Nina, who's perfecting this amazing hot dog as we speak. It's really authentic. It's exactly like the kind you get in these little shacks in Iceland. I've tasted one. It's amazing. Fired Up Pizza with their wood-fired pizza oven will be there. Irie Man, the Afro-Caribbean food van, and Tin Kitchen with their artisan ciabatta rolls. And then Nana Mexico, of course, they're one of the original street food traders in Cambridge. Buffalo Joe's with their chicken wings and pulled pork, and Dogtown hot dogs. I think that's it. I'm getting more requests every day, really, from traders who are popping up and want to get involved.
So where can we find out more about Food Park?
So we're on Twitter as foodpark_cam, and we do have a Facebook page, Food Park Cambridge, that's slowly growing its following. There's lots of pictures on there as well of all the traders.
Yeah.
So that should whet the appetite. And our website's now live, which is foodparkcam.com. And on there you can find a whole list of traders, and we'll be posting dates of the market as we launch. The menus will go up each day so people can keep track of what's going on.
Exciting. Great. Thank you very much for chatting to me about
this. No problem.
So there we have it. I'm not going to lie. I'm very worried for my wallet and my waistline, but mostly I'm unbelievably excited. Make sure to like Food Park on Facebook and follow them on Twitter to keep updated on where they'll be and what will be on. That begins on Friday the 6th of June.
Your city, our city, because we live here too.
Cambridge 105.
There's a great event on tomorrow. It sounds very tempting, and especially on a gorgeous sunny weekend like this. Here's more.
So I'm Ellie and I'm from Childerley, and we're really happy that we're hosting a fringe event for the Eat Festival this year. It's in partnership with Cambridge Wine Merchants. It's called the Siesta Fiesta, so we're focusing on Spanish goods and products. We've got sherries, wines, we've got tutored tastings from Sarah from Gonzalez Baez. We've got Steak and Honour coming, Urban Street Kings. We're bringing street food to the country, which is something that we're really excited about. We've also got a live band coming to play from London, Javier Moreno and Los Amigos, and we also have some flamenco dancing. There's going to be garden tours. You're going to be able to kind of sit under a tree and drink some sherry, and we're hoping that we're going to have fabulous weather and a great turnout, and that it's going to be a really good event. So it's Sunday noon till 6. Come along and see some of the countryside outside of Cambridge.
And if the listener would like to know more, there is a website?
Yes, there is a website that you can go to. It's childerleyevents.com.
Lovely. Thank you very much,
Ellie.
Thank you.
And that's the Siesta Fiesta at Childerly Barn, Dry Drayton. There'll be all sorts of Spanish events, including flamenco, paella, and of course, sherries. Free shuttle buses will be running from the Cherry Hinton Road and Bridge Street branches of Cambridge Wine Merchants. Tickets and information is available at childerlyevents.com, or you can just turn up on the day and buy them there.
On to Cambridge's food and drink news now, so we welcome back Gigi Perry, who brings with us some news for members of the university. Over to you, Gigi.
Thank you, Matt. Now, with exams just beginning, being merry is perhaps beyond us, but we can certainly eat and drink. And drink seems to be particularly popular over the next 2 weeks, with an overwhelming number of alcoholic beverage tastings taking place. If you can't beat them, join them. Cambridge University Blind Wine Society are holding a tasting on Sunday the 18th of May, that's tomorrow, at 7pm at Queen's College, run by their previous president, Veva Imbrizetti. Veva was a competitor for the 2013 Varsity Match. She captained the 2014 team, as well as the top taster this year. She was also on the winning team for the Left Bank Bordeaux Cup in 2013. She is bringing a wide variety of wines to taste, so is perfect if you're after an informative tasting. If you notice any bright yellow t-shirts at the Cambridge Beer Festival, which begins on Monday the 19th of May, chances are that their owners are on the committee of the Cambridge University Real Ale Society. Feel free to approach them for a chat and to find out how you can get involved in the society. Cambridge University Wine Society are hosting another champagne tasting on Wednesday the 21st of May, this time with the esteemed champagne house Louis Roederer. Based in Reims, Louis Roederer was established in 1827 and is considered by a number of wine writers to produce the best champagne in the world. It will be a great comparison with the Paul Roger tasting from several weeks ago. Tickets are on sale online and the tasting will take place at 9pm at Peterhouse. Meanwhile, Cambridge University Blind Wine Tasting Society are holding their annual dinner on Saturday the 24th of May in the main hall in Downing College. The evening will start at 7pm with a Paul Roger champagne reception, followed by a four-course dinner. Pudding is particularly exciting. A blueberry syllabub, kiwi tart tatin, elderflower sorbet and passion fruit coulis. In true blind wine tasting spirit, some tasting and guesswork will be going on. Tickets can be purchased on their website. Chin chin, everyone. It's time to take the H out of wining.
Also, the Olive and the Pea Supper Club will be serving up three North African-inspired dishes at next week's wine pairing with the Cambridge Wine Merchants on Cherry Hinton Road. Last we checked, there were still a few places left. It takes place on Thursday the 22nd of May from 7pm. It's £7 per course, which includes matching wine. You can contact the Cherry Hinton Road team on Cambridge 214 548 or drop by into their shop.
Thank you, Gigi and Ruth, and that wraps up another edition of Flavour. You can listen to a repeat of the programme tomorrow morning at 7am.
Keep in touch with Cambridge Food and Drink News by following Flavour on Twitter, at Flavour105. Previous editions of the programme are available on iTunes and our podcast page on the Cambridge 105 website.
Coming up next is a new series called Summer Saturday, a three-hour programme hosted by Tim Willett, taking you out and about in town with our roving reporters. At 4pm, it's Bookmark with Lee Chambers and Alex Rouget. Then at 5, it's In Your Company with Sam Davis. And at 5.30, The Science Show with Roger Frost and Chris Creese.
So that's thanks to all of our interviewees today. Our next episode is in 2 weeks' time on Saturday the 31st of May. So it's goodbye from all of us here at Flavour. We're off to spend the rest of the afternoon at the Eat Cambridge Festival.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.